Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Wyman and Bob. If you guys have questions for John, you know what to do. Text those questions into 710-710. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
I don't know what we're going to be able to talk about because, you know, the big questions that everybody keeps texting you and Dave and me is that, what's going to happen with K.J. Wright? Well, guess what? He ends up signing with the Las Vegas Raiders. And then today we find out that Josh Gordon has now been cleared by the National Football League, and he's available. And I would have to think, unless they've lost trust in him, that with down two wide receivers, that the Seahawks will try to sign him.
Boy, look at these preemptive answers.
Wait, what about Justin Britt? Oh, wait, that's right. Yeah. He's in Houston.
Yeah, he's in Houston.
We don't even ask the questions now. John, why don't you just give us information? What else do you know?
Well, those are the two big things. But again, it's like, because I know how much you get bombarded by questions about, hey, what about Josh Gordon? What about K.J. Wright? Well, we saw K.J. Wright get off to a victory in his first game with the Raiders, and now Josh Gordon's available, and you have to kind of wonder. Now, the question's going to be, is he vaccinated? Because if he's vaccinated, then there's a quicker chance that he can come on the roster because he's going to be allowed to be in the building almost immediately. But if he's not vaccinated, he has to wait 5 days before he comes into the building. So not that, if they sign him, I don't think he's going to play this week. But also, he can go on either the practice squad, he can then, get on the active roster. But I think that he'd be a great addition now that he can be available.
Yeah, I'm reading Gordon 30 is awaiting final approval from NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, but he is vaccinated against COVID-19 is said to be ready to play. So that's according to the story. He's been vaccinated and he's ready to go. Do you think there'd be apprehension on the part of the Seahawks looking at like, hey, man, we've gone down this road a couple of times. We don't know if we can count on him. Or do you feel like they're just like, hey, if he's able to work out for us for a while until people get healthy, it's gravy. What do you think their approach is?
I think there'll be some apprehension because, again, he's burned him a couple times. One, of course, the loss of his brother and all that stuff, causing all the mental anguish and all the different stuff. This most last one probably affected the trust. But also, there's a need for a third receiver. And particularly with Estridge having the concussion and, Penny Hart having the concussion, the way the concussions go in the National Football League, there's a good likelihood. And again, there's no guarantee, but those two guys could miss this week. And so now you're down to three wide receivers. Now, naturally, they can go and take a couple guys off the practice squad and bring them up, because they're not definitely available. But I think that Gordon would be just a great acquisition to be able to come in there. I thought that all along. I mean, you see that Russell Wilson likes him. I mean, you see that he's still got – I mean, he had talent the last time we saw him on the field, which, of course, was seemingly forever. But, I think that, it's a move that they very strongly have to consider.
Well, I think he made one of the best catches I've maybe ever seen, that where he caught the back half of that football.
Oh, yeah.
Third down.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. You know, it's interesting. You were mentioning the third wide receiver. Now, I know you're talking about the position.
Right.
But if you look at who's going to be the number three receiver as far as, and I think you got to go with targets, don't you?
Yeah.
So you look at how Russ distributed the ball. So five targets to both Lockett and Metcalf, four catches, both of those. And then Disley, Carson, and Everett, actually, now the play was nullified. He had a 20-yard gain. But you look at all three of those guys were, three targets, three catches, if you don't have the mm-hmm. penalty there. Mm-hmm. So, and I think Disley, man, that's my guy. Who do you think, Bob?
Everett.
Yeah, you think Everett, John?
Yep. Everett.
Yeah. You know what? Here's the other thing, too, John. He can block. He mm-hmm. had a couple of plays where, he really – I think, the more you look at him, the better that acquisition looks. And then, the other thing, too, that 33-yard run, Gabe Jackson with a really good block there, starting to look like, they really did a good job helping Russell out, and Russ just seems extremely – happy. He never looked like he was under pressure or like he was, it wasn't anything he couldn't handle. So, yeah, the more you look at this, the more games they play, the more that you realize they had a pretty good offseason.
What I find fascinating, two things as far as the way the stats went, because, they only had – what, 53 plays because they ran the ball 27 times. They dropped back into passing situations 26 times, getting 24 passes off. But, you know, you look at the Disley and Everett, and they were on the field for 34 and 35 plays. And so, you know, you can definitely see a very ramping up more of the two tight end offense. And I agree with you, Dave, is that, you know, what you're looking at is that the third option may not be a wide receiver. The third option is going to be a tight end. Because, again, one of the things that is so noticeable about the Sean McVay offense and also about the Kyle Shanahan offense, although it's different in San Francisco because they have Kyle Juszczyk at fullback, is that they like the use of two tight ends or two options right there because it keeps you guessing as to whether it's going to be a run play or a pass play.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, you look up there, two tight ends, you're thinking probably run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so lots of play action passes there. And Russ is so good at that, too. That's the other thing about his sleight of hand, you know. And then they're running the fly sweep. Then you fake the fly sweep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's that kind of stuff is I think he really excels there. So I don't know, man. I'm trying not to get too overly, you know, because somebody was texting in. We talked about this earlier, John, that they're saying, oh, well, the Colts, I mean, big deal. They're not. I'm like, oh, that was a pretty good team they beat there.
Oh, yeah. It's an 11-win team last year.
Where they
year.
Did it, too.
And,
yeah.
I mean, you know, as I kept on mentioning, you know, they hit him at the right time because I thought they were fortunate to get the Colts in basically the first game of the season because here's Carson Wentz coming over from Philadelphia. And even though he's been with Frank Reich, you know, he still is going to be, you know, making an adjustment in that first game. And then, of course, what made it even tougher for Carson Wentz, he only had four practices. Mm-hmm. And so you have that. I mean, they were down two left tackles because Eric Fisher didn't play, and they had to put Sam Tevy on the injured reserve list with an ACL tear. And, of course, the rest of the offensive line just got beat up bad by the Seahawks' defensive line. And so that worked out real well. I mean, not having Xavier Rhodes in the opener, you saw the big price that they paid there because they're putting, you know, they put out a number of different cornerbacks, and, you know, it didn't necessarily work. And so, yeah, I mean, I honestly thought, now, again, we can maybe talk about New Orleans, you know, destroying Green Bay. Was that the most complete game? But I still look at New Orleans down 10 starters from last year and thinking how much of that was just Green Bay just not interested and not wanting to play. But I thought overall the Seahawks played the best complete game of any team in the National Football League in week one.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah, liked it. Hey, I'm going to ask this question because Bob's tired of talking about it. He's
I'm done with him, John. I'm done.
It's becoming like CJ Procise. Rashad Penny. And look, Pete's saying, look, he's special. He's our number two back. And obviously it's, you know, it's things that we're not seeing. It's stuff at practice. I mean,
right.
We've seen, you know, glimpses of greatness from him. But I don't know, man. I'm starting to wonder if – and I – God forbid it does become the CJ Procise type of situation. We were talking earlier about we used to have a montage here, John, that was like 3 minutes long of Pete talking about CJ Procise's injuries.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one after another, and I'm just hoping it doesn't turn that way for Penny. I feel like he's one of those guys that he just can't get going.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And that's the weird part is that, I mean, it's different than CJ Procise because, you know, CJ Procise is almost like one of those track guys, right? Sprinters and track. And
yeah,
because again, it's like, if I'm not 100%, I'm not playing.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that's not Penny. I mean, the difference in Penny's case is when he was in college, you know, he wasn't supposed to play as early as he was playing, you know, because, you know, he came there and he was just so good at what he did that they kept on putting him out there, and everything that they did, he exceeded over the starter. I mean, they still didn't make him the starter that much, but still, he came out and he did such a great job. And of course, he was always available. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, he's making returns and kicks and things of that nature. I mean, he was averaging like 6-7 yards a carry, all those different things. But then once he gets to the pros, he's shown nothing but injuries.
Hey, John, just taking a look ahead to the Seahawks' next opponent here in the Tennessee Titans,
mm-hmm.
and boy, what an egg they laid in game one. And then we're seeing, you know, Vrabel kind of calling out Julio Jones for that personal foul and, you know, I mean, not really pulling any punches in his description of it using expletives. But Do you think it's going to take a little bit for this team to find that chemistry with Julio there? Do you look at this as, I mean, it's one of 17. It's hard to say this is who the team is, but
yeah.
To see them shut down the way they were from Derrick Henry to Julio Jones to A.J. Brown, that was pretty interesting and surprising. What do you think
well,
of this team?
I think the breakdowns didn't necessarily work on Julio Jones. I mean, the one breakdown was that Taylor Lewan ended up giving up five sacks to Chandler Jones. I mean, five sacks. And so, you know, there was no time for Ryan Tannehill to get set up on the passing game. And then, of course, the running game was stopped. But then the other big thing is that, you know, they make all these changes on defense, you know, sacking a couple cornerbacks, you know, making some changes on the defensive line, coming out with now new defensive ends and all that stuff. And they were the fifth worst team in football last year statistically on defense. And now what ends up happening is that they come out and they lay a bigger egg. So you kind of wonder, what is Vrabel doing with this defense?
Hey, John, I heard earlier today that possibly Jeff Bezos, mm-hmm. have you heard that he's in the market for buying a football team in the Denver Broncos?
Oh, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a $4 billion price tag. I don't know if it was just some kind of a rumor. Can you believe that? $4 billion, John.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that everybody figures that Amazon, even though, again, he's still got involvement in it, but he doesn't necessarily run it anymore, is the likelihood in 2 years to get Sunday Ticket. And so, that should be interesting, but it's not that obviously the money's not coming out of his pocket. The money will come out of pocket on this, but I do think that the Broncos are going to be sold. You know, first off, you have the agreement was made among the siblings of Pat Bowlen to not go into take it out of the court system and try to make some kind of an agreement on things. But I think the fact that you have some of the daughters complaining about the fact that they're losing money, and here's a chance to really regroup the money part of it and move on. So I think that Bezos probably has the leading chance. I mean, everybody kind of figured that Bezos is going to be the next guy to buy a National Football League team. And of course, if Denver's going to be the next team available and it's a good franchise, I mean, as far as finances and things of that nature, for revenue, they're the 10th best. They've got a great fan base. They got passionate fans and a great situation at the stadium. So I think that there's a good likelihood after the season that Bezos becomes the owner of the Broncos. And then we'll see if they make the trade for Aaron Rodgers.
You know, I was right. I just typed it into Google, so of course it must be right. But Nordstrom sold the team to Ken Behring for $80 million.
Mm-hmm.
$80 million is what a franchise used to go for.
Bargain
basement. It's $4 billion now. It's amazing.
Well, yeah, but when you think about the revenue, I mean, even though the revenue was down last year because of the pandemic, I mean, now you're talking, big time revenue that's even going to go up. But because again, like this year, for example, they're talking with the gambling rights, it's going to be like $257 million, coming into teams from all the gambling. And then, of course, eventually it's going to go up to $1 billion. And then, of course, the TV contracts are going to spike, most of them going up maybe as much as, 100%. And so it's like the money and the revenue, because again, the plan was to sometimes by the mid 2020s to have a revenue of $25 million, and you can see it's well on pace for that.
I remember one time we went into Chicago and John Nordstrom, who I just love, he mm-hmm. went up to mm-hmm. Not the bell captain, but the concierge. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, can you tell me how to get to the Nordstrom here? And I was giving him a hard time, like, you don't know how to get to your own store? And he's like, yeah, I've got quite a few of them.
Yeah, he's so, trying to be humble. Yeah. Trying to be humble.
I was just teasing him. I was just giving him a hard time. Mm-hmm. What a great owner. I love
him. Oh, he was fantastic. And again, it's like, how much he cared for this city, how much he cared for the team. He made the mistake of selling it to Ken Behring. And Behring, of course, outstepped his boundaries and took the team down to Los Angeles. And then all of a sudden that got John involved to a point where he gets Paul Allen, who really didn't want to buy a football team, but he gets Paul Allen to do it for the community and do it for the city of Seattle. And sure enough, I mean, you know, not only does Paul Allen come in, they get Todd Lewicki, you know, they get a great franchise, you know, they get Mike Holmgren, you know, now they got Pete Carroll. I mean, you know, this franchise is set up as well as anybody else, but so much of it has been John Nordstrom. And of course, the fact that, you know, John still, you know, gets in his plane, buzz bombs me when he flies over my house,
right,
which he does, and, you know, goes to practice. I think it's just great.
I have a picture of you, me, and John standing out at practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I really miss about the pandemic that really hurt was seeing John Nordstrom around.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Because, again, it's like, you know, everything's now under lock and key, and it's, you know, so much more difficult to be able to, get out.
Yeah,
to get out. And so that, yeah. Now, of course, I mean, we'll see how this game goes on Sunday, because obviously fans in the stand is going to be great. But if it's going to rain and have thunderstorms and things of that nature, that could be a little uncomfortable.
710-710, Mac and Jack's text line for your questions for John Clayton. A few people texting in about Geno Atkins. Is that still a thing with the Seahawks, or is that, you think that's done?
No, I don't. I mean, I think, you know, everything's open. I mean, they got the, you know, $16, $17 million of cap room, and, you know, we'll see what they do with Josh Gordon. And, you know, they only had the three active defensive tackles in the game because they took LJ Collier and made him inactive. But you can understand with LJ, because, you know, two guys have jumped in front of him. You know, Rasheen Green's jumped in front of him. Kerry Hyder has jumped in front of him. And so all of a sudden, if you're going to be the third guy on that five technique chain, I mean, you can understand why he was benched. Now, again, he is a first round pick, and it does look embarrassing. But how about last night? That, you know, the fourth pick for the Raiders from a couple years ago in the draft, who was a defensive end, he ends up getting inactive.
I'm blanking right now. Jamal Adams, the way they played him, John, you know, that was Pete afterwards was really excited. And, you know, and I saw him back in cover two a couple of times where, you know, I feel like he told us that he was going to get five interceptions this year, but you know, I feel like he's going to take that on as a challenge. And but what'd you think about the way that the, you know, they had him flying over the pile there? And I feel like, you know, if he jumps off sides, I said this during the broadcast, it's going to be like with Michael Bennett. It's like the cost of doing business. I mean, you don't have to, you know, you don't want him to do that, obviously, but I feel like it's going to pay off in the long run.
Yeah, I just think the biggest thing, and I think you saw improvement, is that the improvement on his coverage. Because if that is going to be the case, I mean, that makes him that much better. Sure, you know he's going to blitz. Sure, you know he's going to put pressure on the running backs. Sure, you know he's going to be able to chase down people, and that's all good. But, I mean, again, maybe I'm wrong in saying this, but, you know, you look at the beginning of his career, you know, with the three Pro Bowls, how well he's played, the sack numbers and everything else, I do think, and that's why they paid him $17.5 million, he has the beginning of what can be a Hall of Fame career.
John, somebody asking if you think either Earl Thomas or Richard Sherman will play in the NFL again.
Don't know about Earl Thomas because there doesn't seem to be interest at all. There's definite interest in San Francisco about Richard Sherman. You know, Kyle Shanahan even admitted that, particularly after losing Jason Verrett. And then, of course, Emmanuel Mosley still has his knee injury. And then, you know, we'll see where they stand with Kawan Williams. I mean, again, he's the slot cornerback. But, yeah, I think that they're now, again, it depends on where Richard is mentally. But I think that the fact that, you know, Kyle's showing some interest does say there's some hope.
Hey, John, we were talking about what do you think about I mean, we've talked a little bit about it, the Arizona win. I mean, does that – how much do you think it's that they are a team that we don't think is, you know, maybe we've underestimated? How much of it was the Tennessee Titans just throwing a stinker?
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly is, you know, positive from the Arizona standpoint because, I mean, two things really worked out well on defense, even though, again, they got issues at the cornerback position with Malcolm Butler retiring, no Patrick Peterson. You know, but what you like is the fact that J.J. Watt brought impact. And then, of course, Chandler Jones is the best sack guy in the league in the last 7 years or so. And so, and he gets five sacks in the opener. Offensively, I thought that they did another good job with Kyler Murray. And what you start to argue right now, and I know that, you know, there's going to be big disagreement of what I'm saying right now, but, you know, I'm starting to think that the 49ers might drop to fourth place in the NFC West. And it's not because of their talent. It's not because of Jimmy Garoppolo. It's because of injuries.
Yeah.
The injuries, I mean, with 131 missed starts from last year and the fact that now, I mean, they just scrambled to put guys out in the secondary, you know, losing as many guys because I know Jimmy Ward ended up getting banged up in the game. And then, of course, now they're down two running back. Raheem Mostert, we find out today, is not going to miss half the season. He's going to miss the whole season because he had cartilage damage in his knee. And so that's not good. And then, you know, they already have Richie James on injured reserve and Jalen Hurd. And, of course, I mean, it's going to be 2 weeks into the season coming up on Sunday. And you know, isn't it time for Deebo Samuel to get another injury?
John, I sent these guys this story the other night. I don't know if you'd heard of this, but apparently Jay Glazer of Fox Sports reported that before the draft, the Texans were offered 3 first-round picks and 3 third-round picks for Deshaun Watson, and they turned it down. Do you know anything about that?
I would think it's true. I mean, one thing, you know, Jay has great coaching and GM contacts, and, you know, I wouldn't dispute that whatsoever. And again, what I dispute is the stupidity of the Houston Texans for not taking that deal.
Yeah, that's what that was going to be. How could they possibly think, no, we're going to get something better based on what's been going on with this guy?
And the thing is, I mean, you could tell what team it was. I mean, there's one of two teams it could have been. It was going to be Philadelphia and Miami, right? Because they're the only teams that have 3 first-round picks over the next 2 years. And remember, it's not like you can, you know, reach into 2023 and add a first-round pick because you can only take it 2 years at a time. So it's like, I mean, Philadelphia and Miami, and they've been the two teams that have talked most about, you know, picking him up. And it's not like Miami's against Tua. It's just that, you know, Deshaun Watson's the 5th or 6th best quarterback in the league talent-wise.
John, we appreciate it. We'll, are we talking tomorrow? I know it's a late Mariner game, but
yeah, Jordan, I think... Josh Gordon.
Okay, yeah. We'll talk about Josh Gordon and KJ Wright tomorrow.
Oh,
okay.
And Earl Thomas
and Richard Sherman. Yeah. All right, put that down. We'll be ready for those questions.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, talk to you tomorrow, John. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light Made to Chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, your chance to win Seahawks tickets to the home opener. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
All right, it's time to announce this show's Seahawks code word. So what you need to do is head to 710sports.com/win and enter the code word HUDDLE. Huddle, HUDDLE. Do that by the end of our show to be entered to win 2 tickets to see the Seahawks host the Titans in their home opener. And remember, this code word expires at the end of our show. So details and rules at 710sports.com/win. Now, we made reference to this when we were talking to John Clayton earlier, and that is a little bit of turmoil after 1 week, after one game there with the Tennessee Titans, with his brand new team. Julio Jones came up with a personal foul penalty that cost the team, and it was not well received by head coach Mike Vrabel.
I don't think that those are absolutely that's absolutely nothing that we coach or teach. So that would fall into the category of doing dumb that hurts the team right there in bold letters.
Doing dumb bleep that hurts the team right there in bold letters. He just didn't sugarcoat it. Didn't try to sell you on, hey, guy was competing. Just, you know, rough call. No, laid out your brand new, you know, high end acquisition in Julio Jones after week number one.
I'm assuming that didn't catch him by surprise, Julio Jones, because if that's how he treats his players and that's how he's consistently that way. Who knows? He might agree with him, you know? I mean, I think we always think about receivers being divas, and they are, typically. As we talked about with Mark, it's you're relying on too many other people to have success. But I'm sure that was something that, you know, he's probably not too happy about and probably feels bad about. But I do like that about Vrabel. I feel like he's – at first, I was like, I'm not sure I like this guy. I don't know if – you know, seeing him on Hard Knocks, if that's going to, you know, fly these days in the NFL. But this seems like a tough team that tough mentally and physically. And, you know, earlier I was saying you'd always rather play a team that's coming off a loss than a win. I don't know about this one, though. Might have a pretty sharpened focus here as we watch Chandler Jones take Tannehill down, you know, time and time again.
Well, according to Lefko, it was only two times, right?
Hmm?
No. Chandler Jones sacked still got times. All five.
Oh, it took down Tannehill. I'm talking about Lewan was the guy that was.
Oh, yeah.
He gave up two?
Yeah.
And then the other three were, or I guess the other four. He was sacked six times, right? Total?
Yeah, the other four were spread along the line.
Yeah. So Lewan was only responsible for two.
He did, though, get pushed over by Buda Baker. I can show you this highlight. Buda Baker runs up and pushes Taylor Lewan over.
Really?
Yeah. That wasn't very good.
He just came up and pushed him.
Knocked him down.
Yeah. Knocked him
just
down.
Just ran him over.
So he hit him. Okay, a push was like, you know.
He runs right through him. Like a okay. Tinier guy and Buda Baker destroys Taylor Lewan.
You know, Clayton was mentioning this, that nobody's had more sacks since 2012 than
Chandler Jones.
And
he missed part of he played a handful of games last year, a couple of games?
Yeah, played in five.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was a year where he only played in 10, but I mean, you look back at, you go down the list, it's like he had 6, he had 11, he had 6, he had 12 and a half, 17 in 2017, and then 13, and then 19 in 2019, and I want to say he sacked Russ like three times up here at the end of that 2019. And then, you know, you go down and look, last year it was only one, and then five after one game.
I like that Schlereth said, he already made the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Don't even worry about it. He's in the Pro Bowl now after one game, five sacks. So he's, imagine that. Rasheem Green was this team's leading sack artist a couple of years ago with four. He's already surpassed that in one game.
One game. That's just, every once in a while you see that happen. I was looking at some of the, you know, some of those performances as far as single game. You know, Derek Thomas had 7, obviously, in 1990. In 98, he had 6 in a game against the Raiders. And then O.C. Umenyora had 6. Remember him from Giants? Yeah, he had against Philadelphia in 2007. But, I mean, geez, these are like some people have,
Have a season in one game.
5.5 career sacks for yours truly. He surpassed that in one game.
That's amazing. That is amazing. And listen, he's a different level pass rusher, Chandler Jones, than what the Seahawks have. I don't think I'm, you know, disrespecting anybody on this roster. You don't have a version of him here. I think you've got a great group. I think you've got a great, you know, guys we've talked about that can chip in with – this guy can chip in with 5. This guy might get you 7. This guy might get you 6. And collectively – this could be a really dominant group of pass rushers, but I don't think you've got that individual that matches up or is problematic as somebody like Chandler Jones. I don't think that's going out on a limb saying that.
No, not right now. I would say this, though. Darrell Taylor has a chance. And look, I know it's early, and we all, you know, try to jump on these things early, but that sack that he got was incredibly special.
I liked it a lot. It was very physical.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's so many moves that he does have. And the thing, seeing him come out of Tennessee, was he had a special lean about, you know, getting around the corner. And we saw during the preseason it was getting closer and closer and closer. And now to already have that knowledge of knowing how to set a guy up. I mean, do you know how light on his feet he must have made that tackle, Braden Smith? I mean, I know he's a big, powerful guy, but you can't just punch somebody who weighs 320 pounds and knock him down. So that was all about his technique, and I think there's something special there. But, of course, you know, you have to be healthy. You have to, you know, continue to work, and you're going to have some bad games and things like that. But as far as just someone who looks like they could be like that, I would say right now he's the one guy in that pass rushing group that could be that.
Is it a disservice? Is it, if you were the head coach, would you play him as an end or a linebacker?
Darrell Taylor?
Yeah.
I think he's a defensive end. Yeah. I mean, I'm not discounting. I've seen him get better as far as playing in space and things like that. But
are you taking away from what it is that makes him special?
By putting him as a linebacker. Yeah, I don't think you're using him in the best possible way, but I think where he is at right now, I agree with what they're doing because, you know, they want to get him on the field and, you know, and they have some good defensive ends. They want Benson Mayoa out there. Now they want Rasheem Green out there. Of course, they want
Dunlap
Carlos
and
Dunlap for sure. So, yeah, that's a way to get him out on the field. And every once in a while, he'll drop back into pass coverage and things like that. I don't remember seeing that in this game. Anyway.
Him dropping into coverage?
Yeah, we saw it in the preseason, but I don't think in the Colts game, I can't remember. But you'd have to go back and look. But still, I having him on the field, I think it's important. And, you know, look, he's another guy where if you want to believe Pete, I know Pete raves about everybody, and sometimes he's even wrong, but he has been talking about how that has been the one guy who's had the best camp.
Well, we were watching it. I mean, we saw it. We didn't see every moment of his camp, but, I mean, he was catching our eye out there in practice and then in the preseason game. So I wouldn't say Pete was blowing that up too much because he was a guy that certainly popped to us just standing out there watching drills and some of the things they were doing. So I think you're right. I mean, the potential looks to be there physically. Can he put it together and be a consistent problem, consistent force will be the question for him. But, man, he's off to a good start.
By the way, 175 quarterback hits for Chandler Jones. Holy smokes.
What a family that is, right? I mean, his brother, light heavyweight champion of the world in the UFC, will be moving up to heavyweight. And John Jones, his other brother, Arthur Jones, played for the Ravens and the Colts.
Right.
So I don't think he's in the league anymore, Arthur Jones, is he?
I'm not sure. I haven't heard his name, but it's one of those.
Quite a group of brothers, though.
You're going to say the parents, you're like, you can keep producing.
Yeah.
Have more kids.
Seriously.
Yeah, they're champions.
Jeez. All right. Coming up, Russell Wilson stole the show last night. We'll tell you what show we're talking about when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Last night we got the first Peyton and Eli alternate Monday Night Football broadcast. We got a couple sound bites coming up from that. What we did also get from that was Russell Wilson getting some extended time as the game went into overtime. And because of that, they had time to talk about what Ciara was wearing at the Met Gala.
She's rocking the jersey there.
I like it. Look at number three. Got the ball purse, looks like it.
Yeah.
She's got a ring that I wanted. I didn't get it.
Well, you know, I have a ring that Tom has. I need to go get to it.
There you go. I'll leave it.
I stole a couple of them. So, you know, we're good. We're all even, I think.
I watched a bit of that last night. I'd forgotten that it was on, that they had an alternate broadcast going.
I totally missed it.
Yeah, so I saw literally five minutes of it. What I saw, I liked. I just love the Manning brothers. I think they're the interaction between the two of them is funny. Peyton is just naturally a funny guy. I didn't see the Russell part of it. Just completely forgot that they were having it. It was like ESPN had the game, and then ESPN2 was where you could go for there. And they weren't doing play-by-play. They weren't like, all right, the second talking. And three on the 32-yard line. He drops back in the pocket. There was none of that. They were just, it was like two guys just sitting on a couch watching a game, and then they would talk about it. Oh, man, I like that play. You see what he did there? That's what you do against a cover two or whatever was going on. They'd give you that every once in a while, but it was more of a casual conversation amongst guys who know what they're talking about, which was pretty cool.
I missed that. I was really bummed because I got to say, I'm not critical typically of other broadcasters just because I know it's really hard, but I'm just not a fan of the Monday Night Football team. I should have switched over to that. You know who else? They should have had Cooper in there too. Their older brother's hilarious too, and he does a lot of things. Have you ever?
I don't know that I've heard him do anything.
Yeah, I've seen him on some other things, and sometimes he'll interview Peyton or Eli, and he's the older brother.
Does he look like them?
Yeah, kind of, you know. And I remember talking to Archie Manning probably 10 years ago on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was talking about Cooper and what a great kid he is and everything. Because, you know, and it was kind of cool to hear because, you know, Peyton and Eli, obviously, pretty popular and all that. And Cooper was,
obviously.
You know, and he was really talking up Cooper and what a great kid. And, you know, the fact that he, you know, is playing sort of third fiddle to those two guys.
Those two younger brothers.
It's got to be tough, you know, and he handles it really well, and it seems like they all love each other. Yeah, that's cool, but okay, never mind. I was going to peek ahead.
Yeah, just let it be where it's going to be,
all right,
Dave.
What about the...
You must be terrible on Christmas. Do you open your presents early? Do you tell people?
I shake the box.
Do you hand the present to somebody and then tell them what's in it before they open it?
Do you know what my wife makes me do? She tells me what to get her, and then she makes me wrap it. I'm like, you already know what it is. I'm a good rapper,
so
by the way.
So spoiling the gifts runs in the family.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's why Dave can't wait.
I was just
going to
bring up KJ Wright.
Well, we better get to it right now. Okay.
See, he can't even...
KJ!
Sweeping the dial.
Well, Dave called for it, so here you go.
And tripped up, not going to get there. It's KJ Wright. His first big play as a member of the Raiders. And they stop the Ravens on 4th and 1. And that's exactly why the Raiders got right.
It was cool to see him out there. I mean, it was weird to see him out there, but cool at the same time. I was openly rooting for him and the Raiders last night because of him. I don't really care about the Raiders or the Ravens for that matter. I just want to see a good game, and it was a compelling game.
It was a really good game.
But I found myself really, come on, Raiders, come on. Let's go, Vegas. Let's do this. Yeah. And KJ, you know, came through with a big play there, and he was involved in a couple of other plays. It was just weird to see number 34 in the black and silver running around out there.
Like Bobby said last week, it looks ugly.
Yeah. Wasn't that Bo Jackson's number, 34?
Yeah, you're right.
Or was 34. He 32?
Yes.
Was he 34?
34.
Yeah, he was 34. Okay. That's weird. Hey, by the way, I was going to make this joke during the broadcast, but I didn't think anybody would get it. When they were showing DK Metcalf on the sidelines.
With his snow cone hair?
Yeah, I was going to say, blue hair. Like the like Dr.
The
Rick.
Dr. Rick, we all see it.
We all see it. He's got blue hair.
It's just blurting.
That would have been good. I was laughing too much to go to the next one.
Sweeping the dial.
This one comes from Peyton Manning, and well, it just kind of sums up what we know about Jim Harbaugh, that he is a unique individual.
Quick story, I watched film with the 49ers. I threw for the 49ers. We're down at Duke at the Cutcliffe House. Me, John Harbaugh's brother Jim, and Greg Roman were leaving. Mrs. Cutcliffe was like, would y'all like something to eat? She really didn't want us.
She was just trying to be nice, right?
I'm like, no thanks. Greg Roman's like, no thanks. Coach Cutcliffe's like, no thanks. Jim Harbaugh's like, yeah, I'll have a PB&J. I'll take a PB&J.
Of course, a little PB&J.
She's like, I haven't made one of those since my kids were 8. I'm not sure. Yeah, but I mean, if you offer, I'll take a PB&J.
Of course he did. I'll take a PB&J.
Harbaugh, that, yeah, I mean, he'd be the guy in the group that you would think would say that, right?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, just his – and probably to him, it wasn't awkward or weird at all. Didn't really get that it's just a, you know, kind of a social grace, like just being polite. Get you anything? Nah, I'm good, thanks.
Yeah, but
I'll take some. You got any baked chicken? Any potatoes in there?
Well, I don't know. I like the honesty of that though, because why would you ask that question? Hey, can I get you guys something to eat? Anything?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, if the guy says something, you're like, is that rude or is that unexpected? I just think,
it's just
why do you say it?
I guess it's not one
it's
you expect
phony.
Somebody to take you up on it.
It's a phony baloney thing to say.
Or maybe it's you're expecting that they would ask for something that's portable, like, hey, you got a candy bar, a protein bar or something, or a bag of chips, or, you know, something you can take with you. No, I'll take a PB&J. Can you cut the crusts off, too? That'd be great.
Yeah. I'll tell my Jim Harbaugh story. I probably told it, like, once every 5 years. But when he came up here, when he was coaching at Stanford, he came up to, you know, meet a bunch of these alums, and it was at a big fancy golf club up here. What's the one over by UW? And, you know, there's all these big donors and wealthy people and everything. And my brother and I were sitting there, and then he gets up there and he's like, hey, before I get started here, I want to tell you guys something, ask your opinion. I want to rename the stadium down there, and I want to name it the House of Pain. What do you think about that? And, you know, he's kind of looking around really excited, and I was just looking around the room going, yeah, this isn't the group that you would bring that up to. And I think he didn't really read the room.
Yeah,
too
didn't
well.
Know your audience. You got to know your audience. Was he that awkward as a quarterback, as a player? I don't recall him being so awkward, but maybe, I don't know. I mean, that was such a long time ago, but did he have that reputation as a player?
I don't know, man. I thought he was a tough guy, but.
Huh.
You know, I know this. His dad was the defensive coordinator at Stanford before I got there, but my brother had him. And I guess he got in a fist fight with one of the assistant basketball coaches, Jack Harbaugh. The dad did. And I guess it was over some meeting room or something like that, and got in a fist fight with the basketball coach. So
his brother seems fairly normal.
Yeah, John seems pretty nice. And
seems like a normal guy.
Well, and he's also very underrated.
Yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, he's a great coach, but he doesn't seem to have the awkwardness that his brother does, and maybe that his dad does. I don't know. It's so weird. It's an interesting family.
Harbaugh threw for 26,000 yards in the NFL. Yeah, you forget that he was a player.
All right. Hey, don't forget Mike Salk is back in the mornings each weekday, 6 to 10 a.m., including the Pete Carroll Show each Monday at 9:30 a.m. You don't want to miss that. Coming up, we got a double dose of guests. We got Rasheem Green for our player spotlight, followed by El Hombre, Michael Bradley. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.